need a boost to get through another crazy holiday season? Get the energy you need and fight seasonal fatigue with NT Factor's holiday sale. From now through January 1st, get 20% off either size of NT Factor Lipids powder and get a 30-count bottle of patented energy with NT Factor free. That's a $36 value. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to repair damaged cells and improve your body's natural energy production. Clinical trials have shown that NT Factor's exclusive formula reduces fatigue by almost half and helps reduce some of the unwanted effects of aging. I don't go a day without it, so take advantage of NT Factor's holiday sale and stock up for the new year. Get 20% off NT Factor Lipids powder and receive a 30-count bottle of patented energy with NT Factor free through January 1st. Call 800-982-9158, 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today, we're going to talk about hydration. Yeah, hydration is an important theme because too often doctors are dismissive of these pop culture exhortations to make sure you're well hydrated. You know, drink 8 cups or whatever the amount is that's stipulated, cups of water per day. In medicine, when we do an intake, we routinely query people about the foods they eat, the exercise levels they attain, their sleep, all manner of things related to lifestyle. But we don't ask them very much about hydration, right? We don't ask, how's your hydration? But hydration is crucially important, as you'll soon learn. We're going to talk to an expert on hydration. She's Dana Cohen. She's a good colleague of mine. We've worked together in the past, and she has been around on the New York scene for 25 years practicing integrative medicine. She's currently in private practice in Manhattan. She's nationally known for her multidisciplinary approach, which has helped successfully treat thousands of patients. And so it is great pleasure that I welcome Dana Cohen, and congratulations on your book, Fuel Up.
Thank you. Thank you. And more than work together, Ronald, you know, you're a mentor of mine. And I worked for you very early on in my career, and you really shaped how I practice medicine. So I thank you for that.
Well, that's very kind. I take that as the highest compliment, because you're certainly carrying on the legacy of intelligent medicine in your practice. Let's talk a little bit about hydration. I recently read an article about this, is that hydration is literally a matter of life and death. We underestimate its importance. And I highlight a study that showed that hypohydration is known to reduce mental and physical performance, and that it can have a crucial impact on vascular function, on cardiovascular regulation, that it is often associated with an increased prevalence of obesity, high waist circumference, insulin resistance, diabetes, low HDL, high blood pressure, metabolic syndrome. So take us through the science on this, because there's some really interesting correlations here.
So it's, first of all, hypohydration. It's even small levels of being a little bit dehydrated every day that puts you at risk for all of these chronic diseases and morbidity and mortality. So it's lessening our lifespan. And there was since my first book came out more than 5 years ago, Quench.
Which is a landmark book on the subject of hydration. I think that is the definitive book. And then you've followed it up with a book called Fuel Up, which is practical suggestions for how you could up your hydration quotient, right?
Right, because it's not about drinking more and more water. It's really about eating your water, looking at lifestyle and diet, and that whole thing that plays a big role in your hydration status.
Okay.
But yeah, this this little, you know, we all know being a little bit dehydrated, you can have constipation and low energy and fatigue and headaches. But now we're learning that it's way more than that. It is a risk factor for chronic disease, hands down. So I always tell people, before you start on any diet, any nutrition supplement program, whatever it may be, always learn how to hydrate first. And it's different for everybody, whatever that may be. It may be drinking more water. That's going to be a part of it. But it's about eating better. It's about moving better. It's about maybe changing your environment. You know, we live indoors and you and I live in New York, and you know, I think winter in New York is more dehydrating than summertime. Everybody talks about summertime.
I'm noticing that my plants require so much more watering. It's like, you know, I water the plants and then 2 days later, the plant is all wilted and I check the soil and it's all dry. I've actually heard it said that the humidity in a typical New York apartment during the winter is less than the humidity in the Sahara Desert in summer. That was stated once.
And we are living in these desert, literally desert environments, because we're living in fake, you know, air conditioning in the summer, heating in the winter. Yeah, it's our environment plays a big role in that. Processed foods, we'll talk about, that's a really big deal. You know, that's so dehydrating. Alcohol is dehydrating. And even things like, you know, artificial lights, medications. You know, we think about even simple medications. There's things like aspirin and the purple pill and things that you would never think are dehydrating. There's studies that show these medications have ended up people in the ER with overt dehydration because of them. So medications, anything that's going to sort of make you, or toxins even, what, you know, our bodies have to work to get rid of those toxins. And how do we get rid of toxins? We sweat, we pee, and we poop them out. All require hydration.
Exactly.
You know,
our body's waste disposal system depends on it. So how can one determine if one is suffering from hypohydration? Because that's because there's a fine balance, because you could also overhydrate. You could be sort of compulsively reaching for that water bottle as kind of a nervous tick. I sometimes see these, you know, ultra thin, fashionable women, you know, walking around like gunslingers with water bottles in their packs or in their holsters. And, you know, they periodically take a swig, you know, like, you know, they're on their way to the OK Corral for a gunfight.
Speaking of overhydration, just as an aside, there was recently, not that long ago, maybe 6-8 months ago, Brooke Shields was hospitalized for a seizure because she was getting ready for an off-Broadway show where she sings and dances and, you know, like a cabaret show, and was hydrating, drinking to keep her, you know, her voice. Yeah. And she literally had a seizure, which is extraordinarily rare, by the way. But it happens. You can overhydrate to the point where your electrolyte balance is so off that you can get a seizure. Really rare. It happened to her. It was big news.
It's actually been suggested that Bruce Lee, the famous martial arts guy and movie star, may have died due to seizures related to some sort of fluid imbalance, because he was on some sort of crazy diet. Either he was hypo or hyperhydrating. And he might have thrown himself off. So that's another example that you could use in your slides or lectures.
I will,
you
know, take that. I'm going to totally check it out.
You know, because I know you present.
Not,
you know,
not that that's
could,
funny.
I could just see the Brooke Shield slide in your next presentation on hydration before some august nutrition forums. You know?
You know, but it's scary, though, because there's this whole gallon, you know, not that long ago, that gallon a day water challenge.
Oh,
think about that. A gallon is like 128 ounces or something of water. It's a huge amount of water that people are chugging down, because I believe, who's the famous quarterback, the gorgeous one married to the model
Tom Brady.
Yeah, Tom Brady.
No longer married.
You know, no longer married, right, exactly.
For believing.
But that was like sort of his, you know, his way of saying, like, I can do a gallon of water a day challenge. I think he ignited that whole thing. Uh-huh. And I don't know about you and when you were practicing, but on a weekly basis, I see people whose electrolytes, their sodium is too low, their chloride is too low, And when you question them, how much water are you drinking? Like, I drink so much water. Yeah, I'm doing it, you know, and I'm like, hey, you're drinking too much water, you know, and it's not, you know, to the point where it's overtly dangerous, but they're having, you know, imbalances of their electrolytes on their blood tests. And then when you ask them, are you getting leg cramps? Yeah, I get leg cramps all the time. Are you fatigued? Yeah. So some of the same symptoms of overhydration overlap with underhydration. But going back to your first question about
how do you know?
So there's no great test yet. But I think the single, and I've changed this since I wrote that first book. I think the single most important thing to look at is your urine output.
Okay.
So we are meant to urinate every 2 or 3 hours during our waking hours. And I even have people hashtag, like, I know there are days I'll set my desk.
That makes me feel so much better.
Yeah.
I thought I was, you know, those precautionary pees that sometimes you have to take, you know, when you're out and about, you know, the city is a, well, you know, you're in a museum or you're in a restaurant. It's like, yeah.
Well, that's what we're meant to do. And if you're doing that, then you're probably well hydrated. Now, the nuance to that, though, is, you know, we used to be told, like, you should pee until your urine is drink until your urine is crystal clear.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a bit of a nuance. Is it too much?
That good luck when you're taking a multivitamin.
Right, exactly, because it's going to be falsely bright yellow.
The yellow,
So, but I think if I had to pick one thing, you know, the whole idea of looking at your urine color is not necessarily, it can work sometimes if you're not taking a B vitamin, you know, but it's not a perfect test. Sometimes it's good if you look at the color of your urine, you don't want it to, you want it to be straw colored, but looking at your urine output turns out to be a little bit of a better marker of hydration status. And I have patients hashtag how many times a day they're getting up to pee during, you know, at their work days. You know, are you, you know, getting up to pee a few times a day? You're meant to.
Right.
And believe it or not, a lot of people don't. They sit at their desk all day long and they don't pee. It happens to me sometimes too, and I know better.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, see, part of the problem with all these paradigms is that, rightly, and, you know, I'm in the demographic that might be experiencing this, people have decreased bladder capacity as they age, and there is a tendency for two bad things to happen as people get older. Number one, their thermostat for hydration deteriorates, right? Their ability to sense dehydration as part of the general neurodegenerative process decreases. And then perhaps they're on medication too, which could distort one's perceptions of your internal state. And at the same time, they may suffer from urinary problems, men with prostate problems, women with dropped bladder or decreased bladder capacity. So the tendency, especially, you know, people dread commuting in their cars. People dread going to events because where's the restroom going to be? So they deliberately underhydrate. And that could be a problem. That's a very pervasive problem.
And then they get a learned response to not sense their thirst because they're so used to depriving themselves.
That becomes their steady state.
Right. So not only do we, as we age, we lose our sense of thirst, we can also train it out of us by ignoring it and not hydrating enough. So yeah, it's definitely a problem. You know, the output thing in as we get older is harder. It's like I said, there's no great test to really look at, you know, perfect hydration status. So you want to also, when you do hydrate better with foods and liquids and smoothies, we'll talk about that. Think about the things, you know, are you moving better? Are you moving your bowels better? Are your joint aches better? Is your fatigue better? That afternoon drop in energy, you know, we're so often thinking, oh, it's a drop in blood sugar. More often than not, it's probably more dehydration than it is a drop in blood sugar. Now, it's a drop in blood sugar in some people.
Sure.
But but many people, it's more often a drop in just being dehydrated in the middle of the day.
You're
still- the first thing that goes is that use your energy, and that brain fog sort of sets in. So with, if you're older, you can sort of look at these things and saying, you know what, I am, my joint pain is a little better. I'm moving a little more freely. My energy is better. My bowels are moving more freely. So the regular things you should look at too, the symptoms of dehydration, but the output is still, is still the best way to look at it.
You mentioned, blood tests, and we as physicians, we routinely perform blood tests on our patients. And of interest in this study that I referred to, where all manner of ills were associated with underhydration, they use the criterion not of what people reported, because people are notoriously bad reporters. They'll either exaggerate their hydration to appear virtuous, or they'll forget about their hydration because they simply don't recall. Like if I ask you, how much did you drink yesterday? When did you drink? Forget about it. I will misreport it by 50%. So what they did was they looked at their urinary sodium, they looked at urinary output, as you suggest, and they looked at urine osmolality, which is roughly corresponds to the color of your urine. In other words, the concentration of the urine. This is a rough approximation. It's like, is your urine dark or is it, clear? We can't, as citizens, routinely measure that. I think a kind of a cool app that would be for the next iteration of the Apple Watch would be a blood sodium. That would be kind of cool, right? But when you look at a blood sodium, say you see somebody has a blood sodium 131, maybe they're overhydrating, or maybe they have a metabolic condition, like some kind of pituitary abnormality or kidney abnormality. But in this study, they found that, and I think there were other studies where they found that a spot sodium, in other words, like just one reading of sodium that was above about the threshold of 142 or 143, was associated with dehydration. And then you could also look, sometimes you see like a high BUN, or a high, slightly high creatinine. Usually it's the BUN that's elevated to dehydrate. You could actually see clues from a routine blood test.
Yeah, if you're looking at them, I mean, I think those that specifically the one test about the serum sodium too, it works better when you're taking a large cohort of people though too, right? So, on an individual person, if you have a sodium of 142, you're not going to necessarily think that that's hypohydration.
So population averages, right?
Right. So, but maybe we can do, look at them all together in something. But as of right now, I mean, the best that we got, we could do like DEXA scans and look at Sirius. Intracellular and extracellular levels of water and hydration. That's not feasible.
The gold standard, right? But very high tech and not generally accessible even to the average clinician. That's kind of a research project, a lab test, and part of a study.
Yeah, they're hard to get. I have a lot of athletes who want to do them just for muscle mass and fat mass and that kind of stuff. They're actually hard to get. Like they're not, you can't even go to a regular radiology place and say, I want to buy one.
Wow.
You can't do it, Yeah.
So also when it comes to kids, it's a problem because, there actually seems to be some health inequity when it comes to this, because studies show that people in poorer neighborhoods are more dehydrated. And they ask, why would that be? Part of the reason is that they distrust the water supply, that there have been so many reports of lead and all kinds of junk in the water that people don't trust the water, they drink less. When it comes to kids, they actually show that cognitive performance and IQ can be associated with hydration status. So isn't that wild?
Yeah. And I have to say, rightfully so, not to trust the water supply. I mean, that was a disaster of what happened in Flint, Michigan.
Yuck.
People are still paying the price. Children who are now getting, that I understand that. I also wonder if the ultra processed, because because they're cheap and affordable, and you know they're eating more ultra-processed foods in their diets, and those are dehydrating, and you know, and more junk sodas, and the large big gulps, you know, because they're cheaper and easier to get. I don't know. I mean, I just wonder if that.
Explain that. How could a food influence hydration? I mean, generally, my impression is that ultra-processed foods, by and large, are kind of desiccated foods. You know, like Cheetos, the potato chips, they don't really provide a lot of hydration. But can they cause excess fluid egress from the body? Are they diuretics in some way?
I don't know if they're diuretics, but they're inflammatory, right? So, and we have to process them, which requires, hydration. I mean, I think there's many reasons. They're disrupting our gut microbiome. They're inflammatory in nature. You know, I think you could figure out a way around them. This is all conjecture. Theoretical. Yeah.
Okay, so what about caffeine? Because there's a lot of caffeine in soda. And there's people drink a lot of coffee. Now, my preference is I guzzle decaf because I like the flavor of coffee, but caffeine sets me on edge.
Yeah.
Am I in a fool's paradise? Is it dehydrating to drink decaf or does it actually constitute part of my hydration budget?
It counts.
Okay.
And we cited a study. Book. I don't know the exact number of grams of, and it's caffeine, you know, so a certain amount of caffeine in coffee can be a diuretic above a certain level.
Right.
And it's 4 cups, but you can't really say what that means because 4 cups of Starbucks is equivalent to 6 cups of regular coffee or something because it's so heavily caffeinated. But anything under that, it's not a diuretic and it counts, you know, and then, as you know, there are benefits. The polyphenols in coffee can be beneficial and that kind of thing. And you're drinking decaf. So it absolutely counts. Multiple tea counts. And even regular tea and regular coffee. The same with me though. If I were to have 4 cups of regular coffee, I would be off the walls, shaking, can't function.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
You know,
I can easily go through 4 cups of decaf. You know,
but I'm not dehydrated. And then the other thing is there is still some caffeine in it. You may know this. Yeah. It's 1% caffeine in decaf or 2% versus 2% in regular caffeine or something. It's not that much off, but there is still some caffeine. So if you're drinking a ton of decaf coffee, then
you get a little caffeine effect. Apropos the quality of drinking water. I did a little show prep and actually something I mentioned on my program last week. Scientists identified previously unknown compound in drinking water. And apparently what this is, it's called the chloronitramide anion, which previously escaped detection because they didn't have sensitive enough detection methods. But it is the result of the interaction between chlorine, which most water supplies are chlorinated, and various other organic materials that might find their way to drinking water, resulting in this hitherto unknown compound, which, oh, by the way, looks like a potentially toxic molecule. They just don't know enough about it. So it's like, people are leery of drinking tap water. I have a filter that filters out some of it in most of the water that I use for cooking and drinking. But then there's the concern, well, get some plastic bottles of water. Then we're talking about these plastic microparticles, nanoparticles. So you can run, but you can't hide from the hazards of our water supplies.
Yeah. When you go to any kind of lecture or conference on environmental medicine and toxic medicine, it is doom and gloom and scary. And however, you know, you and I both know, our bodies are amazing machines. And if we take care of them, we give it what it needs. We eat more real food. We, you know, try to keep toxins to a minimum. We, you know, that our bodies can combat way more than we give it credit for. you know?
Indeed.
It's hard. It's hard because you can, like I said, you leave those conferences and you are so depressed. You know, it's tough, but yes, we can. I do also filter my water, and, you know, apparently, supposedly New York has some of the best water. But I do filter my water, and I do use a reverse osmosis filter. I use an over-the-counter one, not a very expensive one, but could be expensive for some people, but I think they run around $300. But, you know, every little thing counts.
Are some of the details about how to safeguard your water supply in your books? I know you talked about it in Quench, and your new book is Fuel Up.
Yeah. We actually don't talk about it. I lead people towards the environmentalworkinggroup.org.
Okay.
They have a whole section on water filters, water purifiers, that, you know, that you can afford by your budget. You know, it could be a whole book in and of itself. So yeah, I don't talk a lot about it. I mean, they also have a really nice, I think you can access it from their website on seeing what toxins are found in your water based on your zip code.
Okay.
Which I think is important for everybody to sort of check and just sort of see.
Okay. So we're focusing on the problem in part one. In part two, we're going to talk solutions. The new book is Fuel Up by today's guest, Dr. Dana Cohen, who co-wrote the book with Colin Sapire, correct pronunciation? And
yes.
It is available from all the usual sources. And just a heads up, you have a website, or can people find out about your practice?
Yeah, my website is drdanacohen.com, drdanacohen.com.
Okay, great. And she is located in Manhattan, right here in New York City. Okay, when we return, more on the subject of hydration, a very important ignored aspect of our overall health portfolio. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.